This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The economy is on the forefront of everyone's minds, from business owners to consumers to politicians. But with countless conversations and opinions floating around, it can be difficult to gauge what the state of the economy truly is. Today, we'll try to get a better idea of the state of the La Crosse area's economy. Joining me is Vicki Markison. She's the executive director of Seven Rivers Alliance, an organization that promotes economic growth and collaboration among businesses in southeast Minnesota, southwest Wisconsin, and northeast Iowa. Also, TJ Brooks. He's an associate professor in UW-La Crosse's Department of Economics. Thank you both for joining me today. Vicki, let's start with you. In your view and from the view of Seven Rivers Alliance, what is the state of the economy in the La Crosse area? I know you touched on a few different states.
Mm-hmm. And just to expand on what you said, our region covers western Wisconsin, southeast Minnesota, and northeast Iowa because it follows our labor shed, our consumer patterns, and that makes us rare in the United States. But everyone knows that's just how our traffic patterns flow, so it makes sense to be that have that view of the regional economy. For me, it really depends on who you talk to, what industry they're in, if they're global, if they're not global. You know, I've heard everything from sluggish to can't keep up and everywhere in between. So I wouldn't say that we're fully back where we have been, but I would say on an average, we're making progress.
What sectors are saying it's sluggish? What sectors are saying that there's too much, we can't keep up?
It's even hard to pinpoint it within sectors. If you take, for example, our metal manufacturers, I talked to one and he says, gosh, I just need our companies to pull the trigger because he's a supplier and they're just skittish to pull the trigger. But then you'll talk to another metal manufacturer who's global who just cannot keep up. And so it really depends on those relationships, if they're global or not, if they're a supplier or an original manufacturer. I mean, there's just variables in it. But obviously the place to be is in the global market. You tend to be less volatile. And to be one of those original manufacturers are the key points.
And TJ Brooks, I'm wondering if you can give us your thoughts on the state of the La Crosse area's economy.
I think the things that I've been watching coming out of this last recession really are the labor market. So looking at employment trends and also looking at sort of what's happening in the housing market, construction and the like. I think that we have definitely turned a corner, although as I would sort of echo what Vicki is saying, it's fairly sluggish still. We've seen for the region, we've passed the peak for foreclosures, so foreclosures are on the decline, though in the last 2 years they've sort of increased just slightly in the city of La Crosse. I think that the housing market is starting to pick up in terms of sales and listings, and there's prices are not declining at the pace that they were, so I think we see a bottom there as well. On the employment side, I think we see a pickup as well. We've seen the employment rates locally start to fall and the amount of overall employment pick up. But again, it's very slow, not anywhere near where we were before sort of the recession started, and certainly slower than we've seen the pickup in other states like Minnesota.
I mean, are these different factors how you actually gauge the state of the economy? I mean, you look at housing, you look at job creation. How do all of these play a role in sort of defining how the economy is doing?
It's challenging locally because at the national level, you like to pay attention to some other aggregates such as gross domestic product or basically income and that. And those numbers are really hard to get on any kind of frequent basis locally. So we have to pay attention to the sort of sectors, if you will, that we can get data on. That tends to be, you know, the housing sector, construction permits, things like that are filed. And you can see that data regularly recurring. The employment, you know, unemployment rate is reported fairly regularly, although with a longer delay regionally than you see nationally. So those are the things we look at. There's a bunch of other things we'd like to look at, but getting the data on a local or sort of lower geographical level is hard.
Vicki?
You know, TJ also does one other key piece, too, and that's that sentiment. What's the business sentiment out there? Because a lot of times it's just attitude. Are they nervous? Are they not nervous? And, you know, when we talk about sluggish, it's a lot of nervousness out there, that they're ready to pull the trigger on a project, but they just are a little nervous enough that they're not. So sometimes it's just, and I'm sure TJ would expand on that more, but it's just that sentiment of what are they feeling, how nervous are they, and what are their apprehensions.
How do you fix the way a business owner feels about the economy? It's not like you could put a price tag on it, but
I think you need to have a psychologist on the program to answer that. This is something economists are never quite sure of. We're not the most comfortable with the idea that people are sort of holding back and waiting for a sign, or they're uncomfortable. It's a little bit harder for us to sort of think about how you change that kind of sentiment. You know, certainly it changes, but those things take time. It certainly does not help to have the political uncertainty that we've had. I don't know that I'm comfortable hanging all of our current problems on political uncertainty, either at the federal level or the state level. But certainly, after a while of it, it starts to become a fairly reasonable explanation for at least some of the challenges that we face.
Yeah, and businesses they say it time and time again, they like predictability. So the more they can see what's coming and that it's going to stay the same, the more they're able to make their business decisions based on that climate. Yeah.
So are you able to compare how the La Crosse area's economy is doing maybe nationally or even within Wisconsin, or if you compare it to Minnesota?
Yes, certainly. I mean, you can look at some of those indicators that I spoke about earlier.
Sure.
I think our housing sector, while we didn't have the hit the highs that they did in some other areas of the country, I also think we sort of are, therefore, recovering a little bit slower than they are. They sort of had a higher peak, a higher valley, and are sort of recovering a little bit quicker than we are. I think in terms of the labor market, the same sort of story exists. It is a little troubling. Growth in Wisconsin in general and locally in terms of employment has been more sluggish than some neighboring states. And again, I don't want to attribute that all to the political sort of uncertainties, but certainly those played a role and continue to sort of play a role.
And some of that is just due to the diversity of our economy. You know, we're very strong in healthcare, which tends to be stable. So some of those base industries kept us more stable during the recession. And so that's also why we don't see the big peaks and the big valleys.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guests today are Vicki Markison. She's the executive director of Seven Rivers Alliance. Also, TJ Brooks. He's an associate professor in UW-La Crosse's Department of Economics. We're talking about the economic state of the Cooley region. Vicki, at Seven Rivers Alliance, as you said, you're working with Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. Are you able to tell differences within the different areas of the Cooley region, or you know, when you're working with these businesses, do the state borders just not exist?
For the businesses, the state borders don't exist. However, when you start talking about significant tax changes, then some borders start to exist. I can't say it's enough to make someone jump a border per se. I mean, not a majority. But it's certainly interesting when you have varying dynamics in budget proposals between the states and what that does for the discussions. And, you know, Scott Walker, when he first started out, he was pointing to Illinois and attracting Illinois businesses over. And I just heard him say a few weeks ago, now he's looking at Minnesota and attracting Minnesota businesses over the border. And TJ and I have had discussions outside this conversation about what that does. You know, it's basically a wash in terms of our regional economy to have a business go from Winona, for example, over to La Crosse. It's a net wash for us for the most part. So we try not to get involved in those discussions, but it certainly makes it interesting to watch the dynamics.
You know, what Vicki highlights is what economists call beggar thy neighbor policies. When you really try to sort of steal from one area to another, the businesses. Certainly, if you think about our local economy, the region, we don't tend to think about borders from an economic perspective. And so that really just does move that business around a little bit, but doesn't really have a dramatic impact on everybody else's sort of life.
So I'm wondering if you can talk about economically what's working in Wisconsin, maybe what's working in Minnesota too.
I think that pinpointing the skills gap is crucial. I can't tell you how many manufacturers I talk to, metal manufacturers, that it's welders, welders, welders. It's a drum throughout the state of Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa. And as I just heard Governor Walker say a few weeks ago, the state that figures out how to address that skills gap is the one that's going to get ahead. And so I applaud the efforts of trying to identify where those gaps are. I think that there's lots of solutions being thrown out there as to how to address it that may or may not work. But I think particularly in that case, we really need business engaged in saying this is how it's going to work in our region for resolving that. And then there's a study that was just done by the Brookings Institute that shows beyond that number one skilled workforce need, there's also a need for engineers and IT people. And obviously that spans several different industries, but that's another need that we see in the Seven Rivers region. And I know I've heard echoes, regardless of which state you're in, those are some needs that are out there that need to be addressed.
And going to the skills gap, I know we've heard politicians, at least from this area, talk about how the technical colleges can play a role. What are some of the other solutions, as you're sort of alluding to?
There have been some interesting solutions brought up by the union. There's a union that actually has some trailers out at Volk Field, and they're meant to train veterans coming out in welding. So they're kind of looking at where can we possibly get supply of workforce and get them trained to meet the needs. I know that the Workforce Development Board are looking at ways that they can be – instead of looking at job creation from we have this candidate with these skills, of flipping it and saying the businesses are our customers, what are their needs, and then trying to match the workforce to the needs. It's a transformation, if you will, in how they're looking at things. So there are some solutions out there that people are pursuing. There's also, for us in our region, engineering and IT are, for the most part, things that we have to bring talent in for. So there's some discussions about how can we better be attracting to the region. And it's a natural asset for, again, that borderless approach, because people may come and work in La Crosse, but they may want to live in Winona, because we always work at – we have this diversity of tax structure, so why not work that to our benefit? Because our natural assets span across all those borders. So in a way, that's one asset that we can be using that some see as a challenge that can be seen as an asset as well.
And I've heard people talk about the, you know, attracting IT talent to La Crosse. And if you have a graduate who could choose between Silicon Valley and La Crosse, Wisconsin, many are going to go to California.
I was just going to say that economists, when we hear the word shortage, we first think pricing problem. So,
what do you mean by that, pricing problem?
By that, I mean they're not offering to pay enough.
Oh, okay.
Right? So if you offer to pay someone enough to be a welder, they'll find it that they'll have a decent return on the investment of going and getting those skills. What I think employers are doing now is saying, boy, we want welders, but we want them at a price that we want to pay. And that price isn't enough to justify someone getting those skills, so we want the government to step in and pay for that skill acquisition. I think, you know, when the unionization was higher, that's something that an apprenticeship would have done, but it was through the promise of higher wages that apprenticeship was undertaken. And so, you know, we've moved away from sort of unionization and that model. And so now employers are faced with wanting that job-specific human capital to be acquired, and I think that there's two ways to get that. One is to sort of offer a higher wage, and that will incent people to go get the skills that they need, or the direction they're pursuing at the moment, which is to sort of argue for government intervention to help them basically train their employees.
But could that help with the attraction to the region too, I'm assuming?
In terms of the IT staff and things like that, those are types of jobs where there's a lot of human capital required, so a lot of education required for those jobs. And those people then are sort of very mobile in their jobs. So what ends up attracting them are the amenities of the place. And as you point out, California has amenities we don't have. And I think that we have some amenities that California doesn't as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a matter of sort of understanding your niche and pitching those amenities to that audience. So just sort of recruiting more craftily, I think.
And spinning off of that slightly, you know, engineering is a field that pays well, but where you're starting to see a shortage, and you see this in manufacturing as well, as you start to go into the K-12 system and there's just not a feeder system set up well to go into fields that are in high demand. So, you know, you've heard a lot of talk about STEM, the science, technology, engineering, math, those type of programs being built up in the K through 12 programs so that you're starting to have a deeper pathway into programs such as engineering that are paying well and that there are a lot of possibilities in. And there's also that mathematical analytical background in the IT as well.
So are we seeing many of those efforts going on locally, at least in the K-12 system?
You know, there's a lot of focus on it. I mean, when you talk about comparisons across states, Iowa has a fantastic STEM program that gets very deep into their rural areas. So there's definitely some best practices out there that could be modeled.
And certainly on campus, I mean, I'm not aware of what's going on in the K-12 system, but I know on campus here, our largest major is now biology, by far sort of exceeds psychology historically. So you start to see a movement that direction, but, you know, clearly we sort of need are some more resources geared towards that type of activity.
Here's a good example. In working with our composites cluster, that's really the heart of it's up in Winona. There's 14 companies around the composites industry in our region, which is a very high concentration. And what they're finding is Winona State, back in the 80s, created the nation's only undergraduate composites engineering degree to feed students into the composite companies in the region, which is a great model. But what they're finding is that program is so rigorous that they'll have 60 applicants as freshmen, and by the time they graduate, there's about 18.
So some might drop out.
A ton are dropping out. And they don't want to decrease the quality of that degree because it's very valued, because the 18 that are coming out have 3 to 4 job offers. So when we're talking with Winona State and saying, where are most of your incoming freshmen coming from, they're saying they're coming from the region, but they're predominantly coming from Winona County. So how, even as a region, can we start to make other high schools aware of this career path and the great potential for it by widening that base of candidates going into that program? So there's some quick fixes, if you will. It's not an easy fix, but it's something tangible that you can be doing in the region to create those feeder systems.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guests today are Vicki Markison. She's the executive director of Seven Rivers Alliance, and TJ Brooks. He's an associate professor in UW La Crosse's Department of Economics. We're talking about the economic state of the Cooley region. I want to jump into reactions that the two of you may have from Governor Scott Walker's State of the State in Wisconsin and Governor Mark Dayton's State of the State address in Minnesota. The economy was sort of the highlight for both of them. I want to first play a clip from Governor Walker from his State of the State.
We're going to double down and be even more aggressive with our efforts to improve the jobs climate in this state. That's what I heard during my listening sessions held around Wisconsin. People want us focused on things that will improve the economy and our way of life. That's why I've laid out 5 very clear priorities for the next 2 years. Create jobs, develop the workforce, transform education, reform government, and invest in our infrastructure.
5 key points that he basically says will improve the economy in Wisconsin. I wonder if I can get your reactions to that, TJ?
You know, the first one, create jobs. I'm not sure how a governor does that other than, you know, hiring people to go dig holes. They can say that, but achieving that is a different story, right? So, I mean, the lack of job growth we've seen is happening for sort of many reasons, some well understood, some not so well understood. But they tend to be larger macroeconomic things that are sort of more national and more systemic than a governor in the state of Wisconsin can do anything about. Again, that's not to say that, you know, there isn't an ability to sort of reduce uncertainty in the state and provide a better sort of path forward. But in terms of creating jobs, I just am always at a loss for how they seem to do that. I would have recommended against him doubling down on the 250,000 since he's well behind that pace at the moment. You know, we could have a boom period and have a rapid acceleration in job growth, and that might catch us up. But if I was a betting man, and I am, I would say there's no way in heck he's going to make that target.
Vicki, your reaction to that soundbite?
Yeah, well, there's 5 components in there, so it's hard to know where to start. But on the jobs creation piece, you know, when you talk to businesses, it's not about how can we create more jobs, it's how can we be more competitive. And there's a lot of factors in competitiveness. It's, you know, But bottom line, it's how can we do more with less? And that doesn't mean necessarily less people. In talking with Golden Plump up in Trempealeau County, you know, they...
The poultry producer.
Yes. They created more automation in their plant, which scares a lot of people because a lot of times automation is equated with job loss. But for them, what they said is, we now have increased our production, and we took all of those people who know our company, they know our processes, and we move them to the tail end of the processing process, because with all of the automation, they found they needed them at the tail end. So they were able to maintain their workforce and do more with the same amount, as opposed to doing more with less even. So I think the message is a little off track with how businesses think.
I think you find that that the economy is going through a fair amount of structural change. There's certainly still some demand lacking at the macroeconomic level, but much of what we're experiencing is just large structural changes. And I think Vicky describes very well the example of a business going through that type of structural change. And when you do that, it takes time before the company gets sort of reacclimated to this new sort of distribution between capital and labor, before they can start then hiring more labor eventually to sort of augment their sort of redeployment of labor.
So is it fair to ask, then how do we create more jobs?
My standard joke is, if you want to create more jobs, you should get married, have a child, and in 18 years, you've created a job. In the long run, it's a supply-side phenomenon. The level of employment is a function of really the number of people sort of are interested in looking for a job and working. Now, that's not to say that, again, at the moment we don't face some demand constraints, but there's not much that, you know, a governor can do. Clearly, some things that are not good are dramatically cutting state budgets, you know, cutting back sort of fiscal expenditures at this moment at the national level are also sort of drags on that employment growth. Drags that will, again, outrun, but approximately they're challenges that we face for job growth.
In economic development circles, you always talk about you need to have business expansion, you need to have business attraction, and you need to have business startups. So it's always a mixture of, you need those startups to be replacing where you might have some job losses. But you also just need that entrepreneurial spirit that people are willing to go out and form their own company, and preferably, because it tends to have higher wages, their customers need to fall outside of the region. So they're either national or global companies, and that's how you start to raise those income levels, et cetera, because those global companies tend to have higher paying jobs as well.
I guess something going on locally here in the La Crosse area is the boom of frac sand mining. Is this a sector that could create jobs? I know there's a bit of uncertainty within the different counties and how different municipalities are handling it. But could this be seen as something where lots of people could be employed by the frac sand industry?
There's no doubt that this is sort of a particular sort of shock to demand for labor in the area. And that absolutely, you know, that might create a temporary increase in employment, maybe even a sustained increase in employment. The question would be, do we have the people currently living here that have the skills to do that type of job? Do we have the slackness, if you will? And if we don't, then we have to recruit. I mean, you can think of North Dakota as a good example. So they have the big oil boom. They don't have the labor drive. Is it a good thing for them? I think if you lived in North Dakota for years and years and you suddenly saw, you know, everything around you get more expensive because of the oil boom, you might feel differently. So sort of the native residents, when you have this large demand, sometimes don't view it quite so promisingly. Clearly, though, if there's like excess supply of labor in the area, and that's something that they can, it's a job that they can do, that clearly looks to be a solution.
Well, and the ripple effect of that is interesting because we have one of our board members has opened up an intermodal station up in Winona. Intermodal is basically containerized rail cars, and that allows for imports coming into this area as well as exports going out via the containerized cars, which is key in global exports. And he's opened up this rail hub, and the interesting thing is the traffic that his associate business is doing with the frac sand mining and the rail cars coming out containing sand will help his intermodal trains get through interchanges faster, just because he now has the quantity to be able to do that. So you start to see a ripple effect of how the rail transport of the sand could be helping some of the global exports and the global imports in this region as well. So there's an interesting side component to it. And also his intermodal station is a new business that wouldn't have existed before.
I want to turn now to Governor Mark Dayton's State of the State of Minnesota address that he gave recently. One of the first things he mentioned was that agricultural commodities were up. Later in the speech, he talked about how previous tax cuts weren't working. I don't know if there were any other highlights for you all. But he also he made an interesting comment about Wisconsin.
Minnesota's job growth in 2012 was the 12th best among all 50 states. And we outperformed three of our four neighbors. Iowa ranked 30th best. South Dakota was 44th. Wisconsin, which, by the way, is open for business, Wisconsin helped bring up the rear at 42nd. And please help spread the word across the St. Croix that their unemployment rate last month was 20% higher than ours, while our per capita income was 12% higher than theirs. Only North Dakota in the upper Midwest topped us in job growth last year, and their percent increase led to the entire nation.
And TJ, you mentioned some of the reasons that North Dakota saw such high rises, but Vicki, you talked about this before a little bit. You know, we hear Governor Dayton almost ripping on Wisconsin. We've heard Governor Walker kind of poking fun at Illinois and now more recently Minnesota. You're someone who works on bringing regions together and making sure everyone works together. I mean, what's your reaction when you hear these governors just sort of picking on each other?
Well, just the nature of the beast, so to speak. But, you know, TJ hit on it before. We almost need to be uniting as a Midwest to say, how do we be more competitive as opposed to trying to steal the neighbor's businesses? You know, are there some infrastructure connections that can be made more efficient for our businesses? And you know, it's just the nature of the Seven Rivers Alliance. How can we be working together to move things forward as opposed to bashing on each other?
I want to talk about small businesses. We hear a lot from governors, politicians, business leaders too, that small businesses are the future to a strong economy. Why is that, TJ?
It drives me nuts. So it's one of the potentially one of the largest myths out there that it's, you know, our economy grows because of small businesses. Certainly, if you look at the number of jobs created in gross, it looks like small businesses are responsible for a large portion. If you look at the number of jobs destroyed, small businesses are responsible. And there are a lot of, you know, someone decides to start a restaurant, doesn't go so well, that type of sort of startup and failure. And that's great for a vibrant economy. I just don't see how that is any better than a large business, or I don't see how the business size, based upon the number of employees, should mean really anything for our economy, right? We could think about lots of different ways of organizing businesses. We could force every business to cut itself in half. I don't think our economy would be better off, right? I mean, we have to sort of let the market decide the optimal size of a particular business. I don't share the same views of small business as the engine of growth. I come from a family of small business owners, so.
Yeah, and it's more just the quantity. I mean, there's just more smaller businesses than there are large businesses, so when you have a message, it's going to resonate quite well when you start talking about small businesses, because the quantity is there and most people are employed by a small business. So, but the interesting thing is the federal government keeps changing the definition of a small business. So you never know
really
if you're in a small business or not. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Lastly, I want to look at the definition of a healthy economy. You can listen to the news, you can read the news, and one day it's the stock market's up, the stock market's down, housing starts are up, they're down, things are getting better, things are worse again. When do we know, and does it really matter when we have a healthy economy once again?
Without a doubt it does, right? I think that there are lots of factors that make for a healthy economy. I think we like to see basically people that want to work have opportunities and a bunch of opportunities to work. We don't quite see that yet. We don't have the labor market sort of flexibility that we would like to see in terms of the demand for labor that we would like to see. And income growing. I mean, I think those are the two things that we sort of have really lost the last 5 years. We've seen a large decrease in sort of our average wealth, certainly among the middle class, our average income, I should say, that has not fully rebounded. So I think once we see, you know, household incomes rebounding and growing in a sustained fashion and sort of job opportunities being plentiful, and which allows people to sort of, if they want to find a new job, they feel comfortable looking for a job. They don't feel locked in their job. They don't feel locked in their house. Those types of things are important, I guess, that they see opportunity.
And a lot of it, I mean, if you think about yourself, I think it's based on how much disposable income you feel you have. And when you hear that the economy is tight, you obviously start to monitor your budget a little bit more and put more in savings. And so to me, a lot of it is a matter of perception. And it, as varied as it is of if you talk to this business and things are sluggish and you talk to another and things are great, I mean, to me, that's all. That all affects the viewpoint of their employees and whether things are going great or if things are not going great. And I just think there's so many variables in that.
So housing was an indicator mentioned earlier. We see that it's inching up. Is that a good sign?
I have a little bit of feedback just from talking to some contacts. What happened during the recession was everyone started to do remodels and you didn't see as many new home constructions coming about. And in talking with some of the area builders, some of them are starting to see new construction start up again. It just depends, again, on those pockets. If some builders are doing okay now and some are still looking for work, but we're starting to see the new construction coming around again, which is positive.
And, I mean, what does that mean for the existing housing stock that maybe if it was a foreclosure or just a house that isn't selling? I mean, do you ever weigh that in with as far as how housing is going?
Well, what was alarming to me was I was at a meeting with the Village of Holman a few weeks ago, and they said that all of their buildable lots are sold, which to me speaks miles for, you know, what happened when the recession hit was you had all these available lots. So the more you can start to fill those, the more things start to improve for the building industry in terms of, you know, you don't have to start discounting prices because there's too much on the market, et cetera. So the more we can get existing housing sold, that kind of prompts more people into the new construction mode as well, and you start to see that start to spiral up again as opposed to spiral down.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the construction industry was just hammered in the last recession with employment falling by like 35-40%. And so, you know, most of those people have moved into other industries, but the degree to which we see sort of demand for new construction, I think that's that speaks better to the people who are still in the industry. Their wages will start to, you know, stop falling and start rising, and that's a good thing certainly for that sector.
TJ Brooks is an associate professor at UW-La Crosse's Department of Economics. Vicki Markison is the executive director of Seven Rivers Alliance. We were talking about the economic state of the Cooley region. Thank you two so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Coming up next, learn how a scientist turned artist is working to preserve the area's landscapes through her paintings. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.